Chapter 29, Back in Germany. Like many others, my friend Jacob and I were completely occupied in the struggle for material gain. It was not easy to put down roots, deal with the past, and find a place to lead a normal life. It was my good fortune to have met influential people in the business world who helped me. My past in the concentration camps was never an obstacle. On the contrary, I am sure that more doors were opened to me because of that. Most of the people I met received me warmly and in friendship. Some felt they had an obligation to do something for me as a sort of reparation on their part. I do not want to make comparisons, but I cannot deny that some of those people impressed me deeply with their kindnesses. Many, and sometimes very special, were my business adventures. This is one of them. A special relationship which began as business and developed into a close friendship was that with Mr. A. Vilk, whom we called the Old Man. He was a highly intelligent and interesting man who understood economics and finance well, and whose political home in the pre-war years was on the left. He was sure that a Jew before the war could belong only to the left, and in the pre-Nazi era he moved in their highest circles. When the Nazis came to power in 1933, they put a price on his head, but he just managed to escape to France. He and his German wife were active in the French resistance and were temporarily interned. After the war, he returned to East Berlin and held a high position in that economy. Through one of many coincidences, I became acquainted with him, and a friendship of unlimited confidence developed. He was much older than I, and became like a second father to me. He helped me in every way to overcome the past and to return to a normal life. He aided me and my whole family, and we owe him a lot. In the early 1950s, his world became troubled. It was a time of the political trials and intrigues in the East. In the ongoing court and show trials, he knew most of the witnesses and the sentenced, had many doubts, and soon saw through everything. No wonder he felt disappointed and indifferent. From our long, intimate talks, I gained an insight into those circles, which was not without effect on me. Mr. Vilk died in the West without having turned his back on the East. He refused to accept a special grave among his comrades. Ironically, he found his eternal peace in the Jewish cemetery, although his life could hardly have been called typically Jewish. At the same time, pro-Israel activities developed in the Jewish life of Germany. There was fighting in Israel, illegal immigration continued, commissions and delegations came and went. I stood apart and was ashamed. My conscience tortured me, but I was not able to change my life, even though it depended solely on me. Occasionally I heard that other people of my age returned to school, but then just vacillated. The fear of retrogressing into misery weighed heavily upon me. A chronic anxiety about tomorrow and the future, and a permanent insecurity, and a feeling that I would not own tomorrow what I appreciated and possessed today, burned into my mind. This fear was not restricted to material things, but included everything I valued and worked for, including Israel and freedom. Were all these thoughts the results of years of suffering? I do not know. We often discuss the question of whether or not survivors of the Holocaust had changed psychologically. During the hard times, I saw people fight for survival with their last ounce of strength, either because of their will to live or out of defiance against their persecutors. I also saw many people collapse under the pressure of their suffering. I developed exemplary friendships and saw how people in the depths of misery shared their last morsel of food, how they were prepared for any sacrifice. There were examples of brotherly love which grew out of empathetic pain. But there were also people who stole food from others, regardless of previous friendships or other ties, including those between fathers and sons. Some people put a great deal of stock in the tenets of morality, while others disregarded them completely and openly. Some definitely believed in God and their faith. Others became fanatically anti-religious and rebellious. In spite of a number of exceptions, our persecutors never succeeded in replacing good human qualities with the diabolic inhuman ones they promulgated and encouraged. This is a summary of my observations and experiences, which do not necessarily refer to the functionaries of the ghettos and camps, but the so-called grey Moor soldiers, the group to which I belonged. Undoubtedly, Majdanek and Auschwitz left their mark on all survivors. Perhaps we sometimes assume more radical and extreme positions because of our experiences. We tended to become less tolerant and more easily unnerved than before. During the years of captivity and slavery, we really learned to appreciate freedom and independence. It seems to me that the anxieties of the past always hang over us like the sword of Damocles. No promises, protests, or resolutions from political parties, governments, or nations were sufficient to free us from this Auschwitz complex. We learned to mistrust in that camp. I confess, however, that as to Jewish existence and survival, I trust Israel only. Many of my friends, quite a lot of them, travelled legally or illegally to Israel. Again, I felt put to the test and fought yet another battle with my conscience in order to arrive at the right decision. In accordance with my convictions, I should have gone to Israel, perhaps even to a kibbutz, but I did not go. I was far removed from life in a kibbutz and felt more attracted to individuality and close family life. I had experienced more than enough of group living. I also did not feel that I was in a position to fight again, as the years 1945 to 46 would have demanded of us. Tired and battered, I felt that I had contributed my share of suffering. Like Adam and Eve with the apple, I was corrupted. I was convinced then, and especially since I was successfully integrated in a complete life, I still am now convinced that I was not faithful to my belief and was therefore wrong. I admit that I followed the easier path of complacency and egotism, but I am not trying to justify my actions. I accept my responsibility and have since then lived with a guilty conscience. If I had gone to Israel immediately after the liberation, I probably would have become a good Israeli and an ardent Zionist, but this can be said of so many others as well, and is not an excuse. My wife was also reared in a Zionist home and was attracted to Israel and life in a kibbutz. It took many discussions and disputes until we finally reached a mutually satisfactory decision. We were married in Marburg in 1946 and lived there for some time in a small rented attic apartment. Our landlady was a decent, religious, elderly woman with whom we got along very well. She had never known Jews before. After she found out that we had no horns or claws, she was very happy with us. One day she declared that if Jews were ever persecuted again, she would certainly hide us. We could count on that. Feelings of guilt and the urge to atone are evidently shared by a large number of German people. As a Jew, one can see this as a positive step. Nevertheless, we feel uneasy around such people. Unfortunately, it seems natural for some, even if they are not anti-Semites, to assume that persecutions of Jews can be repeated, even after Auschwitz. The example of our landlady in Marburg is engraved on my mind, because it is so typical of many people who either want to strangle us out of hate or smother us with brotherly love. We would be content to be allowed to live as human beings and as people like any other, without ever again needing to rely on others.